You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Lately, I've been speaking to some of my brothers and sisters around the world, from Sweden, England, all kinds of different places, Australia. And it's nice to meet people of our race that appreciate what we're trying to do. And they're sharing our material. They're liking our videos. Some of them are donating to help us, which is a wonderful thing. And we all appreciate it very much because it helps us in our work. And they give us support and let us know that there are many people that are coming out of it, so to speak. They're starting to wake up to what's really happening. And slowly but surely, the Saxon is awakening. And may it speedily happen. Ladies and gentlemen, the title of this message is A Trip Down the Yellow Brick Road, Part 2. Yes, we're going to continue with The Wizard of Oz. I have much for you today, and we shall continue to see what we saw last week. We shall continue on and find out more of what's really been going on. You know, I will mention to you this, is that you see, the Scarecrow, when you look at him, he was always doing all the thinking throughout the film. Yet, he wanted a brain. Dorothy didn't even know how to get the Scarecrow down off the pole. He said to Dorothy, "Maybe if you turn the nail downward, I'll slip right off." He did the thinking right from moment one. This is what theosophy is trying to teach you, ladies and gentlemen. Number two, the Tin Man, who was seeking a heart, would actually rust himself till he couldn't move by crying tears. Yet, he wanted a heart. In other words, he already had all this. He didn't need some outside force like Yahweh. He didn't need Yahweh God or his wisdom or his counsel or anything like that. It was already within him, according to theosophy. And then when we look at the lion, we find that he had courage already. As a matter of fact, back in the farm, Bert Lahr, he's a Jew, plays the lion. And Dorothy had fallen in the pig pen in the farm. And ladies and gentlemen, if you know what that means, if you ever were feeding your own pigs, which I hope you wouldn't be, I certainly wouldn't have any pigs. But if you did have pigs on your farm and you fell down in the pig pen, watch out, because they'll just kill you and eat you. So Bert Lahr jumped right in and saved Dorothy right out of the pig pen. He had bravery already. I had told you that the person that plays the Scarecrow gave her a solution to her problem by going by Elmira Gulch's house. He was already thinking. Not only that, but Dorothy never had actually left home. She was always home. When she woke up from her dream, she was home. You see? And the bumbling Dr. Marvel, who she met, who was an obvious fraud, was also a fraud as the Wizard of Oz. Also, I'm sure you'll see the Tin Man, that when he was there, he was a very caring person. A lot of feelings. So they already, whether it was on the farm in reality or in Dorothy's dream, they had already had these attributes that they were seeking. And that's what theosophy is trying to teach you. This philosophy. This loved philosophy. So let's continue. We were talking about when they came out from the poppies. And I did want to mention this, that I had an initial thought. When they were in the poppy fields and they begin to fall asleep, really only the lion, Dorothy, and Toto, all of a sudden it began to snow because of Glinda the witch, the good witch. Yeah. And that made me think of snow, cocaine, which is something what people do. It's called snowballing. That's what supposedly, what's his name from Saturday Night Live? He was snowballing. He was doing coke and a downer at the same time. Well, that's what heroin is or whatever. Speed, I forget what it's called, but when you do something that speeds you up and slows you down at the same time. See, they had fallen to sleep. The witch had made them fall to sleep in the poppy fields, if you remember last week. So what's funny is when I read an article that I'm going to read some of, you'll see that he mentions that there, and I thought it was quite interesting that I neglected to mention it, yet I thought about it. I also neglected to mention the fact that they have, I don't know what they call them, but familiars. Toto is Dorothy's familiar. A witch usually has a cat as their familiar. Toto is a dog. Okay, so it's just something to think about. And he does mention that in his article. So, when they get in there, into the Emerald City, the lion goes into his, "If I were king of the forest, not queen, not prince, not duke." Well, that's all in humor, but this is the same old way the Jews try to mock something. The lion is a symbol not only of the tribe of Judah, but a symbol of strength and nobility of kingship. So it was being mocked by the Jews in this movie. Think about what I'm telling you. Also, Yeshua, Jesus, as you call him, is known as the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. But also with that, the way Lar is singing, he's making fun of the way the male and female Anglo-Saxon singers of white society sang, because they had superior vibrato in their abilities. And a lot of the other people couldn't do those things. So by mocking it, it's the same thing as destroying it to the Jews. By mocking, as you heard when I was on Andrew Carrington Hitchcock's show and we were talking about Blazing Saddles, they mocked the cowboy genre and destroyed it. It never was the same after that movie. Well, remember that these Jews wanted to destroy all the monarchs and the kings. And they wanted to bring their favorite form of government, the most vile form of government called democracy. Democracy. So they're mocking, the lion is a symbol that they're mocking. Not only mocking the tribe of Judah and Yeshua himself, Yahweh himself, but they're mocking a symbol of kingship. And probably laughing that they've destroyed almost every part of the monarchies. And they certainly have destroyed the English monarchy by getting themselves embedded within it. So things began to change after that time, where they brought in lesser singers. Singers that couldn't do that supreme vibrato. That was done in opera. That was done in even regular singing. And they kept mocking it, because now that I think of it, in the Three Stooges, they also mocked people that were singing with that supreme vibrato. Vibrato is... you know, like a violinist. The greatest violinists have superior vibrato. It's a very wonderful technique. And because the best of the best were superior in that, they mocked it so that they could bring in lesser singers, lesser people that didn't have that ability and that capability. Just as today, they've destroyed the music business. They've got people that can't even sing are the stars of music business, of the music business. And they've got a whole bunch of people that can't really even act as affirmative action actors. So, I went on in my article and I said, just like the wizard, the devil is a fraud. It says about him in the book of Isaiah 14:16, they that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake the kingdoms? In the same way, the wizard, when he was discovered by Dorothy's familiar, they said they knew he was a fraud. They had made them tremble when he said, I am Oz, the great and powerful Oz. Bring me the broomstick of the Wicked Witch of the West. And he would have his flames going up. You see, it was all a fraud. Like the devil is a fraud. And that's what it says in the book of Isaiah. Is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms? What do you think about that, ladies and gentlemen? What else is interesting about this is the witch had a flying Negro servant, a monkey. And she used that monkey to destroy. She had a whole army of them. And she sent them after... she sent them after Dorothy and the rest of her crew, and they wanted them to bring Dorothy back to them. And there was about 20 of them beaten on the Scarecrow, who's the weakest of them all. See, the same old story as today. These black people, there's about 20 of them kicking on them and ripping the hay out of and beating on them all at once. And they picked the weakest. See, they didn't go after the Tin Man. And they didn't go after the lion. They went after the scarecrow. And it's just what they do today. They go after the weak. 20 of them at a time. Also, these creatures, these monkeys with wings, are hybrids, just like they are today. They're either half white, half black, half whatever. They don't know who they are, and they actually have mental problems because of it. And they're used as a weapon against us today. So you see this familiarity. It was the same thing that happened in Weimar, in the Weimar Republic in Germany. They began to bring Negroes in, and they were Negro singers, and they brought them in to, you know, mix with the people and to help them to destroy the German people, just like they're doing today. Nothing has changed, ladies and gentlemen. There is a picture in my article where I put the Happy Merchant right on the Wicked Witch of the West. And she's got her hook nose just like the Happy Merchant. She's smiling just like the Happy Merchant. And she's got her hands, she's rubbing her hands together just like the Happy Merchant. While she's telling Dorothy that these things must be done delicately. I must destroy you, but these things must be done delicately. Isn't that what the Jews have done with us over the ages? As they've tried to destroy the Anglo-Saxon people, they said clearly, like the witch said, I must destroy you, but these things must be done delicately and gradually. And on the abortion table, by legality, by law, we will actually legalize through the law system killing of babies with abortion. We'll make it legal to do child murder, ritual murder sacrifice. We've done that in all the other countries of Europe and been kicked out of there 109 times because of things like that and usury. But what we'll do is we'll make it legal. We'll make it legal to kill your babies and drain their blood and sell their body parts and pass their blood around to be drunk by the rabbis and Jews in general. You say that's not true, right? You don't believe that, right? Well, you better take another look around. Because they've been doing this for a long time. Now, in the same way with usury, I'll have you notice, and this is just spur of the moment I'm bringing this up, they also made usury legal by law. How did they do that? The Federal Reserve Act of 1913. They're the ones that made sure that Taft did not get in because he would have not allowed that law to be passed. So they used Teddy Roosevelt on the third party of their demonocracy, the vilest form of government, demonocracy. Notice how D-E-M is right in the front word of demon, and it's also in the front of democracy. That ought to spell a little etymology as we were speaking of in the last show. So they brought Teddy Roosevelt in on the third party, and it drew enough of the vote away from Taft. And then they waited till the senators went home as just an extra security measure, and they passed the law when Woodrow Wilson was in. Woodrow Wilson was a Jew, one of their own, but they even had him by blackmail to ensure. So let's move along here. So these people pass laws to make it legal to kill your babies. They pass laws to make it legal for them to steal the money from your government. They pass laws steal money from you. Now, you'll notice what's interesting about this is you probably never realized this before, but the witch has an army of Negroes, being the flying monkeys, but she also has an army of hook-nosed Jews that are green just like her. And if you look at the picture in my article, the picture will show you very clearly that the ones who are singing, "Oh, Leo, yo-ho," they're all big hook-nosed Jews. Go look at the picture. Now, what happens is the witch sets the scarecrow on fire. And Dorothy throws a bucket of water on the witch, which causes the witch's death. How do you like that? How about that for a sentence? Dorothy throws the bucket of water on the witch, which causes the witch's death. Which witch is which? Well, there it is again, ladies and gentlemen. What have I told you about in the past, about the children of the flame? They shall return to the flame. Water put out her flame. Water, the children of the water, shall destroy the children of the flame. It shall be so. No matter what the children of the flame have to say about it. I told you that we are to be born of water and spirit. When we come out of the womb, we are born of water, and we are born from above. Is the same way as Yeshua was. Nicodemus was a Jew and was born from below. He was born of water, but he was not from above. And Yeshua told the Jews that in the Gospels, in the four, Matthew, Luke, and John, you know, it says so. It says that they are from below and cannot follow him where he will go. That's why Nicodemus, who was a Jew, said to him, "Must I be born again? Should I go back into my mother's womb and be born again?" No. You are simply not of the proper race. You were born from below. What it means to be born from above is it means that we are Yahweh's offspring. The Adamic race had the breath of Yahweh breathed into Adam. It is very clear we were not the first race on this earth. We came after. And we are his literal offspring in the same way as these Jews like Nicodemus are the offspring of the devil. And these two have been fighting. The children of the flame have been fighting the children of the water for a very long time. So when you see the bucket of water thrown on the witch and she says, "I'm melting," and she said, "I can't believe a good little girl could do this to me." Because she was powerful as one of the children of the flame. You saw how powerful she could command people. She could create poppy fields. She could bring fire down from heaven, as you saw her shoot it down at the scarecrow. We also saw her disappear into a flame right when Dorothy first had gone to Oz. So the child of the flame was destroyed by the child of the water. And that's exactly what will take place in the future. My dear friends, today the children of the flame have a time to test the children of the water. This is the time of Jacob's trouble, the children of the water. This is the time Yahweh had the water split for the children of the water to walk through it from Egypt. Yes. So today the children of the flame have one up on us finally. The yoke has been taken off as Isaac told to Esau that it would happen at a time where Jacob's yoke would be taken off Esau's neck. And then, which they were kept in the ghettos and chained on the streets, they were a sub-race and still are. But they were let out, as I said, by Napoleon to become equal with the citizens of France. So now, ever since they've been let out of there, we've been having a trial by fire. If you don't believe so, look at Dresden. If you don't believe so, look at the wars that we've been through. If you don't believe so, how about when a gun fires, when you fire a gun? How many people did they shoot in the back of the head in the Bolshevik Revolution? We are in a trial by fire because Yahweh is going to have pure gold in the same way as I told you about in the book of Job. So we are going through this trial of fire, and the fire is getting more intense and more intense, is it not? And the book of Revelation certainly demonstrates the fact that this trial has not ended yet. It's going to intensify. And if you believe in silly raptures and things like that, you're in for a serious disappointment because you've been tricked by liars and the children of the flame, the people that teach the Jewish version of Christianity and with their Jewish Jesus. What they are is the false prophet. They are part of the false prophet, in the same way as the Pope, who is a Jew, a Jesuit Jew. He's a false prophet as well, and speaking many, many things that you can tell are certainly not coming from the heavenly realm, but coming from the pit. You could call him the anti-Pope. Just like you can call the Jewish version of Christianity the anti-Christianity. That's exactly what it is, because it's not the true Christianity. I don't care how much you want it to be, how much you've been tricked into it to be, it just isn't. And if you would seek the truth would set you free. But you just keep sitting in the pew and let somebody else do the work for you. You've become like the electrons in electricity. You're going with the flow, no sense resisting anything. You're lying in a boat that goes downstream and you give it no resistance to go upstream and find out what's up there. You're just gonna go anywhere the wind blows. Nothing really matters to me. Just put it in the song of Queen, right? Anywhere the wind blows, nothing really matters to me, right? That's where you are, a lot of you. You're clouds without water, as the Bible says. You are the foam on the top of the ocean. Whatever, que sera, sera, or as Archie Bunker would say, que seru, seru, whatever will be, will be. If you're living like that, you're doomed. You must learn. You must seek the truth. I'm not going to go into that again right this moment because I've told you so many times that it's going to take effort. It's going to take work. It's going to take time. And you're not going to get paid for it necessarily. Most people don't. I'm not sure if anybody does. Maybe people that write books. I don't know. So, you've been taught in your society that time is money, so therefore you really have no time to seek the truth because you can't make any money seeking the truth, right? But yet you can watch the sweaty Negroes run up and down the football field in the religion of football, can't you? Even you're going to continue to watch it, even if they put a knee down during and dissing you as the white race, dissing the founding fathers, dissing our country. I know our country's not the same as it was before, but that national anthem still means something to me. I remember what it used to mean, and that's what it means to me. You'll still continue to watch that football, won't you? You don't care if somebody spits all over your country. You don't care about any of it. You'll just continue right on. Any way the wind blows, nothing really matters to you, right? So we are going through this trial by fire. But at the end of this trial, when Yahweh returns, they shall be bundled up and they shall return to the flame. That is the very saying I will remind you once again. We came from the flame, and we shall return to the flame. Now, the wizard had told the questers to bring back the broomstick of the witch of the West, and he would grant their wishes. This is just like the devil, you see. Now, he knew, he thought he knew that there was no way that they were coming back with that broomstick. But he was wrong. And they came back with the broomstick, and he was going to go back on his promise, like the devil does, and the children, and his children, the Jews. But at that point, he was discovered to be the fraud that he was, just like I said in Isaiah 14:16. So when he was back to the wall, he used his cunning, his verbiage, which is what the Jews are known for, his salesmanship, even though he was a fraud. He had the gift of gab in the same way as the Jews do. So, what's interesting is he gives the scarecrow a diploma from the Universitatis Comitatus e Pluribus Unum. That e Pluribus Unum means out of many, one. Immediately, the scarecrow has been given intellect, and he immediately has this Freemasonic nonsense of Pythagorean's theorem, and he quotes it, just like that. So his brains, even though he was always a thinking man, he received the intellect, or the light, from the Wizard of Oz in Emerald City, the City of Light, the green light, the color green that the devil loves so much. And think about it, out of many, one. See, if they have their way, out of many races, they will mix us all until there's one race left. The brown man. Out of many currencies, there shall be one. If they have their way, and it appears they're about to launch that now in a sense. And the Pope is over, the false prophet is over in Jerusalem. He might have left now, but he's trying to, out of many religions, bring one. That's what E Pluribus Unum means. I want you to think about that. Not only that, but I will tell you that the scarecrow represents another thing as well. He represents your straw man. When you were born, they forced your parents to create a birth certificate for you. It has all uppercase letters. Your name, your Christian name, has no uppercase letters in it. So they created uppercase letters like you see in government documents, like you see on your credit card statements, like you see any place that you deal in commerce. Your name is capitalized completely. I love when people say, "Oh, get out of here. Where'd you get this?" Think I'm kidding you, right? Well, you see, they created that birth certificate so that you, it's a straw man. It's not you, but it's a way for you to do, it's like a birth. When you bring a ship into the harbor, it has to be berthed into the harbor, and then it can do its commerce, you see. So when you go to the courts today, you are under what's known as Admiralty law, which is the law of the sea. Yet you are a man of the land. Your Christian man is a man of the land. But your, this diploma, so to speak, or this birth certificate, is your license that you would show the person when you bring your boat in to the dock to do commerce. You see, a man of the land has many rights. But a man of the sea has much fewer rights. If you were picked up, if your boat sank in the ocean or you fell out of an airplane or whatever it might be, you know, or something happened and you ended up in the sea and you were picked up by any ship, you would be under the law of the captain of that ship. The law of that ship is the captain. He is the judge. He is the jury. He could kill you legally, and there's no problem, because you would be under Admiralty law. This is trickery. And they've tricked all of us with these things. So the scarecrow represents your straw man. He represents your the teachings that you've been taught as well, I would say. The indoctrination. Today they start indoctrinating children as early as age 2 or 3, whereas they waited a lot longer before they did it before. They learned to get you as early as they can and get this nonsense seeded into your brain. And the indoctrination, of course, includes the Holocaust. That's probably one of the most important things for you to know. They also indoctrinate you into political correctness, in the fact that we're all equal, which I told you is a relatively new thing, and there is no truth in that, and no truth to that whatsoever. And as you go through high school and you begin to get learn a little more, finally you go to college perhaps, and all your Marxist teachers prepare you for the workplace, prepare you how to act, how to speak, how to think politically correct, And therefore, you are given a diploma. A certificate. But are you any smarter than when you went in? Not really. Do you know any more truth than when you went in? Not really. But the only way for many of you to get those high-paying jobs, should I say previously, because those are disappearing, is you must have this degree. You must have a degree, a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, so that you can be a qualified expert in their theories, political correctness, gender equality, etc. Okay, one very interesting thing I would mention to you is the lion receives the medal of the Triple Cross. Now, what's funny is they didn't use the actual Triple Cross, because the Triple Cross is the cross that's on its Baphomet. It's on the leader of Freemasonry's hat. It was on Aleister Crowley's hat. Triple cross means that you have the regular cross, then above the cross section there's a little shorter cross line, and then up above a little shorter cross line than that. That's what the triple cross is. Some believe this to be the mark of the beast. But in the movie, they gave him an old medal, and he pinned it on the lion, and made him a man of a society, they said, of noble and people that have courage, a society of the courage, of people with courage. So he was made a member of something, you see, and there it is. As you grow up, you should seek some of these secret societies, perhaps, and become a member. Now, the wizard tells the Tin Man, this is very interesting. He says that he's lucky not to have a heart. He says that hearts can never be practical until they can be made unbreakable. Now, the wizard's correct in a sense that he's lucky not to have a heart. And why I would say that is not to have a heart at all, but if his feelings are in control, you would be a very fortunate person, because you wouldn't let the Jews and their media sway you all over the place by your feelings like they do with all of us, especially our women. Especially. However, he says that hearts can never be practical until they can be made unbreakable. So he knows more than Yahweh, because Yahweh made your heart breakable. You see, the wizard's smarter. He might be a fraud, but he knows better than Yahweh, just like the rabbis do. He says this, which is a deception that I picked up on this a long time ago. And this is something I want you to think clearly about. Think about this. He says, remember, a heart is not judged by how much you love, but by how much you are loved by others. I'm going to read that again for you. Think on that for a second. I'm going to take a sip of coffee. Think on that for a second. A heart is not judged by how much you love, but by how much you are loved by others. Did you catch it? Did you catch the lie? It is contrary to what he said, because we are judged on how much we love. And we are also judged because the world, it says, listen, we are judged by how much we love, is what I say here. And the Bible says, John 18, if the world hate you, you knew that it hated me before it hated you. Verse 19, if ye were of the world would love his own, but because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. So is it true that you're judged by how much others love you? Or is Yahweh right? Think on that again. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever should believe in him should have everlasting life. Right? Eternal life, right? Now listen. But John, this is the same person that wrote that verse, said, if the world hate you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own. See, you're not of the world. God didn't, he's not talking about that he loved that world so much. He doesn't like that world at all. And he wants you to stay out of that world. The world that he loves is his own people, is his own offspring, is the ones that follow him, his sheep, the ones that know his voice, the ones that acknowledge him, the ones that acknowledge him in the good times and the bad times. They don't just ignore him their whole lives and ignore his word and ignore his counsel. And then when they have a little trouble or a time of trouble, they begin to cry out and acknowledge him. And then when he delivers them from the trouble, they go back to ignoring him. No, that's not the way it is. You acknowledge him every day. You thank him all the time. I don't thank him when he does something good for me. Even when he does something that, if all, you know, to correct me, I would still thank him. And I do. Even if it hurts. So if ye were of the world would love his own. See, this world is different, but because ye are not of the world, you see? You are not of the world, and that's who he gave his only begotten Son for. You. Because he said, I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Folks, things are not always what they seem. If the whole world loved you, you would know something's wrong, wouldn't you? I've got to tell you that it's quite disappointing to me when I see my videos. If I teach on something like the subject I'm teaching on now here with the Wizard of Oz, or the further away the subject goes from Yahweh and the Bible, the more people will listen or watch or like. But when I teach on biblical things, even though there's a core out there that do listen to it, you get less ratings. Now, I'm not a real rating fan anyway, but my point is, if I had 10,000 people and all kinds of people loving me in my radio show, I'd begin to worry, am I preaching the wrong thing? Now, there will come a time, as the Anglo-Saxons wake up, that there will be more and more and more listeners. But now is not that time. And if I had so many people listening to me, I'd be a little concerned. So the wizard says, you know, after he gives out all of his medals and everything, you know, he gave the lion his courage and all that stuff. They all wanted to know, well, what about Dorothy? She needs to go home. So how the wizard got there in the first place is he took a balloon. And he actually came from Kansas, I believe he said. So what he said to Dorothy is, you and I will return to the land of E Pluribus Unum, out of many one. Now, think about that for a while. Because the land that we have here in America was an experiment for some. But E Pluribus Unum meant out of many tribes of Israel, one tribe again. In other words, returning us to one stick. But the devils and the devil and his children turned it around to mean that this is some kind of a melting pot. And out of many, one means that we will race mix ourselves all into one race. And we will remember that General Cornwallis, as I've mentioned before, wrote to George Washington, and he said that within 200 years you'll be teaching the Jews religion in America. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are teaching the Jews religion. We're teaching the Jewish version of Christianity with the Jewish Jesus. How did he know that? Because he had seen this before. He also said you'll also be working towards a one world government. Was General Cornwallis right? Well, of course he was. Out of many, one. Out of many religions, one. Out of many currencies, one. Out of many countries, one. And so on, and so on. Out of many doctrines, one. Out of many countries, one. On and on and on and on. Out of, you know, the money, everything. So they turned this around, and of course they always copy Yahweh and his things, and they use them for their own purposes. Somehow Dorothy misses the balloon, and Glinda the Witch shows up at the end. Now the bumbling wizard, he didn't know how to take care, he didn't know how to bring a balloon back down, so he was no pro at the balloon any more than he was at anything else. But she tells Dorothy that she's always had the ability to go home. Why didn't she tell her that back in Oz? I mean, back when she first showed up at the Yellow Brick Road. She told her the only way to go home is to visit the wizard. So this is a lying witch. Because now all of a sudden she tells Dorothy, you've always had the ability to go home. All she has to do is click her heels together three times and say, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. When asked if Dorothy learned anything from this, she said, if I ever go looking for my heart's desire again, I won't go looking any further than my own backyard. Because if it isn't really there, I never lost it to begin with. Now, this is the philosophy of theosophy. Her own backyard is her mind, is herself. If I ever go looking for my heart's desire, what was her desire? Was to go home. But she was home all the time anyway. What was the scarecrow's desire in review here? He wanted a brain, yet he was doing all the thinking. What was the Tin Man's desire to have a heart? Yet he was the most emotional of the crew, arguably. And what did the lion want? He wanted courage. But he's always been the king of beasts. Everybody knows the lion is the king of all beasts. So they never had to go looking for their heart's desire because it was already within them. This is theosophy in her own backyard. Because if it isn't there, I really never lost it to begin with, you see. It's beautiful, you know. So again, you don't need some outside source to be your strength. You've always had this divine spark within you, within your own backyard. All you ever will need is within you, and you need to learn that for yourself, just like Dorothy. Now, this contradicts the Bible and our need to look to Yahweh for wisdom, knowledge, strength, guidance, righteousness, redemption. There are many more things I could list. Think about these things. You know, the Apostle Paul talks about the law, and he says, the law cannot bring you righteousness. See, we were under the law for a time, and the law helped us to keep in line. But the problem with all of us is, no, not one is good. Not one. Not one of us could keep the law fully to the T, which means we were all condemned. I mean, speaking of Israel, because we're the only ones that had the law. We're the only tribe. We're the only people that were given the law. And we could not keep it. So one came in our place, our kinsman, Yahweh himself, and he kept the law to the T. Nobody could keep it but him. He kept it for you and I. He cared about us that much that he left his heavenly realm and came to suffer these things for us. Now that's love. He kept the law for us and became our righteousness. See, we could not do it by being good boys. That's what Paul's talking about. About we receive this by faith. In the same way as our father Abraham, by faith, because he was faithful and took his son up there, and in many other ways, took his son up and was going to kill him, like Yahweh said, and even the faith of his son, forget not the faith of don't forget the faith of Isaac as well. He was willing to do this. So faith in what Christ has done completes the law for us. He completed the law, and that's why we get our righteousness from him. It did not come from us being good boys and good girls. Does that mean that if he did it for us, we can go out and do whatever we want? No. No, that doesn't mean that at all. That just means that you should be trying to keep his commandments because you love him. You keep the Father's commandments, or Yeshua's commandments, because you love him, because you want to please him, because you want him to say, well done. Why would he say well done to you if he completed it all himself? He wouldn't need to say well done. My faithful son. You see? I'm not saying you need to be bound by the law. What I'm saying is you should try to keep his commandments to the best of your ability. No, you will not be able to keep his commandments fully. No, you will not always do that. That's why he came. That's why he is our righteousness. It's just that simple. Think of the simplicity that's in Christ. Don't try to complicate it. We could not keep the law. No, not one is good. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God, except him. Therefore, of course you would cast your crown before him in the heavenly realm if you were one of the 24 elders, or anybody else for that matter. Without him, there is no righteousness. Without him, there is no redemption. Without him, there is no completion of the law. He did that for you and I. He did what we could not do. All of us couldn't do it, but yet he could do it himself. So that's what he came to do, because it could not be accomplished by us. Not in this physical realm. It's nigh impossible. As a matter of fact, it is impossible except for him. So he showed us that he could do it. He did it and accomplished it for all of us. And I have faith that he did that for me. And that's where we get our righteousness from. It's the same reason. You see, when Yahweh promised things to Abraham, he didn't say, Abraham, if you follow my law to the exact T, and you never sin and do anything wrong, I will promise to make you a company of nations. I promise to make your people as the sand of the sea. I promise this, I promise that. The promises were not based upon the law. The promises were based, and Abraham had to have faith in those promises. Do you understand? And Jesus Christ, or Yeshua, is the fulfilling of the promise of completing the law, the promise of being your and my redemption, yours and mine, both of ours, our righteousness. So that you can never go up and say, well, I did this and I did that and I did this and I was good and I did this and that. That's not how it works. But just because he did it for you doesn't mean you can go live a reckless life and just do whatever you want and you're covered by what he did for you. Use your common sense. Just understand the simplicity in Jesus Christ and don't try to overcomplicate things. It's just that simple. You couldn't do it. Face it. However, those that love me keep my commandments. Now that is said in the books of the Bible from top all the way to the end. Don't tell me he doesn't say that all through the New Testament, when he certainly says it over and over and over again. I'm not trying to say that you're put under the law for your salvation. That's what Paul's trying to distinguish for you, and you can't understand it because you're trying to complicate it. We are saved by faith in Jesus Christ. The faith that he died on the cross for us, and the faith that he was risen, and the faith that he is our redemption and our righteousness, because we could not do these things ourselves. However, that does not mean you can just do whatever you want. You still must run the race. You still must obey Yahweh's commandments to the best of your ability. I'm not talking about sacrificing animals. The sacrifice is over. That part of the law is over with. Because he became the sacrifice. That was done until he would come and do the ultimate sacrifice. Would you not say that this is the ultimate sacrifice of love? Would you want to come down from a heavenly realm and be spit upon, mocked, ridiculed, beaten, uncomfortable, become uncomfortable, have no place to lie your head, lay your head, have to deal with scum Jews and an Edomite as one of your disciples, whom the devil entered into at the Last Supper? Yes, the devil entered into Judas of Iscariot. Judas was not a Galilean. Judas was from Iscariot. It's a place. It's not his name. He was an Edomite. He was picked for that very purpose. He, as I've said before, like the Jews always do, he got control of the money purse. Even in Yahweh's little circle, he had a Jew in control of the money purse. A Jew whom his father entered into. Not Yahweh's father. Not Yeshua's father, I mean. But the Edomite devil's father, the Edomite offspring of the devil, his father entered into him. And in the same way as the demons entered into the pigs and destroyed themselves, he went and bought a field and hung himself. Think about that. Think about that. The same way the pigs had the demons shot into them, they ran and ran off the cliff into the water and killed themselves. When the devil entered into Judas, he went and betrayed Yeshua for 30 pieces of silver, which he picked up off the floor, I believe, because the Pharisees had no respect for him, that he would do such a thing, even though they were glad he did. He picked up his money off the floor, and he went and he bought himself that field and he hung himself, just like the pigs. So, I'm going to read to you an interesting article from, I don't know how much I'll go through this because, you know, a lot of it is just, I don't know, you know, I wonder what you think about it. If you want, write me at davidjamesboston@gmail.com. This is from Fritz Springmeier, and he and Cisco Wheeler put out a book, and this is from, it's called Chapter 5, Science Number 5, The Skill of Lying, The Art of Deceit. It's called Wizard of Oz and the Illuminati Mind Control. The rule of thumb that the programmers and handlers go by is that they will say anything to get the job done. Is that not the ends justify the means? And CIA handler will tell his agent in the field whatever will work to get the field agent's cooperation on a mission. There is no height, nor breadth, nor length to these people's deception. They have successfully kept some deceptions active for decades, if not for centuries. The use of fiction. The history behind the Wizard of Oz programming is interesting. It suggests that the Wizard of Oz has had an important part in the occult world all along. One of the secrets of the mystery religions, especially the Egyptian Isis mystery religion, was the ability to use drugs and torture to create multiple personalities. The word Oz is known to have been used by its author as an abbreviation for Osiris. Monarch victims have the golden penis of Osiris placed into them. The Grimm brothers, who were Kabbalistic Jews, gathered the folk occult stories together. Their stories are full of spells, trances, and drugs. Sleeping Beauty is put to sleep, and the trigger to wake her is a kiss on the lips. These are serious hints that the occult world didn't stop programming people with dissociative states and triggers when the ancient Egyptian empires fell. Instead of using modern lingo such as hypnotize, they would say cast a spell. Later in Freemasonry, the right worshipful master would charge, meaning hypnotize, an initiate. The occultist Baum, a member of the Theosophical Society, was inspired by some spirit who gave him the magic key to write the Wizard of Oz book, which came out in 1900. The book's story is full of satanic activity and satanic thinking. The story was chosen in the late 40s to be the basis for the Illuminati intelligence community's trauma-based total mind control programming. As a way of enhancing the effect on the programming, monarch slaves are conditioned to place trigger items into their lives. When the movie was made, Judy Garland, who had lived a life touched by the occult world's abuse, was chosen to act as Dorothy. Judy's later husband, Mickey DiVinco, was a Satanist and a chief assistant to Roy Radin, a rich Satanist who worked with the Illuminati, who controlled the process church, Covens, which had as members mass murderers, Berkowitz, and monarch slave Charlie Manson. There are several members of the Carr family who are also tied into both DiVinco and Radin's process church and the Illuminati. With the numerous long-term connections between the Wizard of Oz books and movie to the highest levels of the occult world, it is not without reason that one can theorize that the original series of 14 Oz books had an ulterior motive behind them. The 14 books of the Oz series are The Wizard of Oz, The Land of Oz, Ozma of Oz, Dorothy and the Wizard in Oz, The Road to Oz, The Emerald City of Oz, The Patchwork Girl of Oz, Tick-Tock of Oz, The Scarecrow of Oz, Rikintink in Oz, The Lost Princess of Oz, The Tin Man Woodsman of Oz, The Magic of Oz, Glinda of Oz. These books are still being sold and are being read to children who are being programmed with trauma-based total mind control. The 14 books came out in various editions. The originals came out in 1900 and shortly thereafter. In the 30s, the 40s, and in the 50s, the words were retyped set and given different pages. When working with a survivor, it might help to identify the decade of the edition the slave was programmed with, because the pictures and the page numbers are varied from edition to edition. Of course, having good pictures is an asset in programming, because the child will visualize off of the pictures when building its internal world. In addition to this, large Wizard of Oz theme parks are being built by the Illuminati to provide places to carry out programming and to reinforce the programming which traps the minds of monarch slaves. The best example of this is the audacious MGM Grand Complex in Las Vegas. Although other theme parks around America also use a Wizard of Oz theme, if you have read Fritz Springmeier's Be Wise as Serpents, you will know how the Theosophical Society ties in with Freemasonry, Satanism, and Lucius Trust. I've already told you that. Several famous members of the Theosophical Society include, he says, Adolf Hitler. I don't believe that. Mahatma Gandhi. He was a homosexual, by the way. H.P. Blavatsky, who I've already told you about. Alice Bailey, Henry Steele Alcott. And they say, he says here that Elvis Presley was a monarch slave. He also brings up Manly P. Hall, an Illuminati Theta programmer, and at least a Grand Master within the Illuminati who sat on the Grand Druid Council, and Frank L. Frank Baum. The man who wrote the Wizard of Oz, the book The Wizard of Oz, was a member of the Theosophical Society. L. Frank Baum lived in South Dakota and created the Wizard of Oz book as a theosophical fairy tale incorporating the ancient wisdom of the mystery religions. The books have so much material from inside the secret world of the Illuminati that few who understand the Illuminati wonder if Baum wasn't an insider. The moral of the book is that we must rely upon ourselves, for we alone have the power to save ourselves. This was part of the original lie of Satan in the garden. Satan has completely dressed up the same original lie into different packaging and is distributing it worldwide as the most popular American fairy tale. L. Frank Baum explained how he came to write the book. It was pure inspiration. It came to me right out of the blue. I think that sometimes the great author has a message to get across, and he has to use the instrument at hand, being Frank, he means, being Frank Baum. I happen to be that medium, and I believe the magic key was given me to open the doors to sympathy, and understanding, joy, peace, and happiness. Michael P. Hearn edition, The Annotated Wizard of Oz, New York, Clarkson N. Potter, 1973, page 73. In Baum's time, the head of the Theosophical Society, H.P. Blavatsky, had been putting out her journal called Lucifer. In other words, I highly suspect Baum knew that the Theosophical Society, what it was really all about, and that he himself was deeply into the occult. The book, The Wizard of Oz, came out in 1900. It wasn't until 1939 that the movie was made. This next section will cover the numerous parallels between The Wizard of Oz material and the occult world and the occult world's programming. This is broken up into three sections. The parallels between the Wizard of Oz book and occultism, the Wizard of Oz movie and Illuminati rituals, and the Wizard of Oz series of books and monarch programming. For those readers who are unfamiliar with the occult world, some of these parallels at first may seem stretched. When one sees how many parallels there are, then occult nature of the books begins to sink in. The authors could provide the reader with more parallels between Satanism and the Wizard of Oz book, but we believe the following will suffice. Some parallels may also apply to the movie. Okay, so he starts off. Auntie M represents H.P. Blavatsky's Mula Prakat Treaty, and Uncle Henry represents HPG's Unmanifested Logos. This is going to get a little, deep here, so I don't know how much of it I will actually go through, but we'll pick around and see what we see. The carnival huckster, later seen as the wizard, is advertised as being connected to the royal families of Europe. The royal families of Europe are secret Satanists from powerful occult bloodlines. Dorothy is brought to Oz by a cyclone. You see, that may be true to a point, but some of those royal families in Europe are our people. Where is the distinction there? Just a thought to think about. Dorothy is brought to Oz by a cyclone. The word cyclone originally was the Greek word cyclone, which means both a circle or a coil of a snake. In other words, the snake takes Dorothy to Oz. And remember, when she gets there, that same circle or coil of a snake is that ancient goddess emblem, where she starts at the beginning of that coil and goes around to the left and around to the left and then follows the yellow brick road out of Oz. Those are my words. Dorothy's three companions represent the mental, emotional, and physical bodies that HPB wrote about. Dorothy acquired these three companions just as Theosophy says we will when we come into incarnation. Very interesting. To quote HPB, there is no danger that dauntless courage cannot conquer. There is not a trial that spotless purity cannot pass through. There is no difficulty that strong intellect cannot surmount. In the book, the Tin Woodsman was an ordinary being of flesh, but a wicked witch casts a spell on him. He kept chopping off the parts of his body, which were then replaced by a tinsmith, until he became the first bionic man, with a completely mechanic body. Boy, hasn't the Illuminati been trying to do this one? Yes, cyborgs, the $1 million man, you know, those two I can think of off the top of my head. In step with the Wizard of Oz mind control programming, the wicked witch and naughty children cannot stand water, but dissolve. Robotic clones are created in the minds of monarch slaves, which can only be mentally dissolved by mentally placing water on them. Dorothy goes questing. Here he says questing. Dorothy, remember what I said? Dorothy goes questing in Oz. Theosophists, New Agers, Satanists go on quests. Quests. That's what I said to you, too. So that's a confirmation. Oz is shaped like a mandala with Emerald City in the center. An impassable barrier. Four-sidedness. Four symbolic colors. The circle and the center. Yes, the old Illuminati sign. The male and the female. In other words, the circle would be the penis of Osiris or the obelisk, and the circle would be the female, which represents the sons of God and the daughters of men, which represents the Nephilim, the angels who came down and had sex with the daughters of men. You see? So the colors and directions given in Oz may also have symbolic meanings as well in the occult. For instance, Emerald City is green, and green is the fourth point of the Eastern Star, Wurman's Freemasonry. Yes, that's true. You know, I said that to a woman of the Eastern Star, and I said the reason why that point of the Eastern Star is green is because that's Satan or Lucifer or Halel's favorite color. And she turned around and gave me a look of surprise like you wouldn't believe. And that's what it says here. Emerald City is green, and green is the fourth point of the Eastern Star in Women's Freemasonry and Satan's color. You've heard of Jack and the Green? The route that Dorothy follows in Oz has the shape of a T with its three points defining an inverted triangle. The yellow brick road suggests gold, the perfect metal. Remember I said the money standard with her silver slippers, although they became rubies in the movie? The yellow brick road suggests gold, the perfect metal. Gold is considered to be divine and the source of wisdom by the Illuminati. HPB had written, "There is a road, steep and thorny, beset with perils of every kind, but yet a road, and it leads to the very heart of the universe." This was the yellow brick road that Baum and the Theosophists sought to portray in his fairy tale. The book contains a great deal more perils and adventures on the road than the movie. I'll just try to finish this. And then we have the two points left after this one. We'll start next week with that. The article shows that the great teacher is a humbug, but Dorothy and her own companions have the abilities to help themselves if they will only realize their own powers through the help of the good witch of the South. This is in line with the Theosophical Societies, the Church of Satan, and other occult group teachings, which teach that the individual has the capabilities within themselves to achieve anything. One of the Theosophical Society's publications states, "Prepare thyself, for thou wilt have to travel on alone. The teacher can but point the way." The voice of silence, as quoted in the Wizard of Oz article, Quest, Summer 1993, page 54, "Part of the mindset of Satanism is that reality and fantasy become blurred." And isn't that the truth of what happened there? This blurring has been a part of the brainwashing that is being systematically given to American children within monarch slaves. They have an incredibly difficult time trying to differentiate between reality and fantasy. That should ring a bell about our people today. Because of all the mind programming they have been subjected to, there are several techniques which we will determine for monarch survivors if their memories are real, if the board game called Illuminati, put out by people connected to the Illuminati, the game states, well, don't believe any of this, it's all true. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.